welcome to the Happy Rant podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we have a lot to cover today. We're going to be talking about altar calls for kids, a new Calvinist documentary, and then we're going to unpack a little something that we do at the end of every episode. So it promises to be an exciting ep. But first, Pipe, we got some business to take care of, man. Because it is raining sponsors on our humble little program. So
it is, yeah. It's tough being business mavens. It's so much to handle. So we're going to do our best.
I like being a maven, though. I like the way you framed that, actually.
Yeah, it's a title I've decided to adopt. And so I figured we could share it around.
And speaking of being mavens, we need to remind people to save the date, to mark their calendars for the Live in Louisville event. We are in some high level negotiations with a couple of potential venues in the Louisville area. So we will let you know as soon as we have that finalized. But Pipe, again, what are those dates?
Ronnie, what are those dates?
Big T, what are those dates?
Actually, I think I have them. October 23rd or thereabouts, right?
October 23rd,
which I believe is a Sunday, and it would be Sunday evening if our plans hold true.
Correct.
And they will. We promise. We are going to do this thing one way or another.
If you live in the South, that means you'll have to skip Sunday evening church, or the prayer service or whatever it is that they do at your church on Sunday evening. But it's okay, because you'll be doing something spiritual, meaning listening to this program.
Or maybe you'll have time to go to church, but you have to skip out before you go forward at the altar call. So that's a possibility.
That's true. That is a possibility. But baby, we're getting ahead of ourselves with that.
I know. I was just throwing a little teaser out there, Big T.
That was a really good tease.
Baby, that's good radio is what that is. Pipe, take us into these promos.
Yes.
Let's do a little business.
So we have two sponsors. The first is Moody Publishers, back to sponsor us again. And they want to highlight The Pursuit of God by A.W. Tozer, which is a book a lot of people will have heard of, because it's one of those sort of spiritual development classics, kind of in the vein of a Knowing God or The Pursuit of Holiness or some of those others. I'm happy that they wanted to highlight this one, just because in publishing, as we've talked about before, newer is always considered better. So to see somebody like Tozer and The Pursuit of God being highlighted by a publisher, I find encouraging, because this is one of those books that has been influential on, I don't know if it's millions of people, but I'm going to guess it's millions of people, hundreds of thousands at the very least. And the gist of the book, the core of it, is really looking at everybody's desire, whether or not they can express it, to draw closer to God. And each chapter looks at one aspect of waiting on God. So it's got aspects of spiritual disciplines, aspects of soul care and soul health. And Tozer writes in a way that's kind of unparalleled, and nobody else did it exactly like him. And if you know anything about his life, he modeled this idea of waiting on God and pursuing God kind of simultaneously. It sounds like an odd juxtaposition, but they go together really well. So The Pursuit of God, A.W. Tozer from Moody Publishers, they have re-released it, so no text has changed, but just repackaged, put it back out there. About a year or two ago, Moody got the rights to all of A.W. Tozer's material, so they will be putting out more and more from him, some unpublished work, some repackaged stuff, reintroducing it to a different generation of readers, which I think is great. So, Pursuit of God, A.W. Tozer, go check it out. It's Amazon, Lifeway.com, Barnes & Noble, all the places you buy books. Go get that.
Pipe, do you think Why We're Not Emergent is vintage enough to get this kind of a re-release from Moody and kind of a push of this nature?
I think it's old enough. Okay. I'm not sure that there are any more emergent people to not be, however.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we killed that thing a few years ago, but I'm just saying.
Your problem, Ted, was that the book was too effective.
Oh, there it is.
You destroyed the entire movement.
You dismantled the whole idea of being emergent that nobody needs to read that book anymore.
You make a great point.
People should go read Why We Love the Church, because that hasn't gone anywhere, and we should still love it. So,
that's right. Still there.
Also, read Bridezilla of Christ by Ronald J. Martin and Ted Kluck, their newest excellent book. That's an unpaid sponsorship, Waterbrook Multnomah. Go get that book.
Wow.
All right. Now, back to the paid sponsorship, because those are way more important than the unpaid ones. Olive Tree is sponsoring us again. So go to olivetree.com. It's Bible study software, more or less. That sounds really boring, but they have a a great app for iPad, iPhone, various mobile devices, where you can look at multiple biblical texts side by side. You can look at commentaries or lexicons or whatever your speed of study is side by side with whatever text you're studying. You can use the original languages. They have a massive library of Christian books. And the way that they sell stuff, you don't have to pay like $1,000 for this massive package. You can buy a la carte. So you can buy just the pieces that you want in terms of resources. They're offering a code. If you use the code RANT, you get 20% off anything you purchase through July 31st. So if you just want to test it out and buy a couple little resources, a couple smaller things, you get that discount. If you want to go whole hog and buy some of their larger packages, they do have those. They just don't require you to start there. But it is a really, really cool resource for studying, especially if you're teaching or preparing to teach or preaching. You can do all of that there. They allow you to bring your highlights, your notes, your commentaries, all those things into one place so you can look at every single thing you have collected and every single thing that other people have collected on a single text in one place. So go to olivetree.com, use the code RANT, get a 20% discount on anything you order from them through July 31st.
There it is. Boys, I got a quick story to tell you. So last week, I picked my kid up from church camp, right? And he is 13, so he's at that tender, kind of awkward age.
So he smelled like a porta potty.
Oh, dude, yeah, he just smelled awful. Pipe, you have no idea.
I do. I've run camps for 13-year-olds before, and they all made it out alive, but barely.
Well, and listen to what this camp did on day one. And let me caveat this whole thing by saying it was a good camp. It was a good experience. I'm not finding fault per se. Day one, they do the thing where they're like dousing each other with like eggs and like pancake batter. You know, this is all a part of a game, like a big get to know you thing. So all this clothing gets doused with all this gross stuff.
And then shoved in a bag.
And then it gets shoved in a plastic bag. Which bag gets shoved in a storage thing, which is roughly like 180 degrees hot each day. So it's just been moldering for a week. And I opened this stuff up. Dude, I had to run it through the wash twice.
I'm surprised you washed it. I would have just thrown the whole thing away. Absolutely.
No, I know. Yeah, I thought about it, man. So anyway, he gets home from camp. I'm like, dude, you know, great to see you. How was camp? He's like, oh, I bought a pocket knife. You know, you're in the South when they go to church camp, but he's excited about buying a knife.
But
you know,
when they get to be 15, they can buy the assault rifle.
Yeah, they can get a gun. Exactly. He'll come home with an Uzi next year. You know, so he buys a pocket knife, and I'm like, dude, what about the speakers? What about like the spiritual stuff? And he goes, I felt really horrible. And I'm like, why? And he goes, well, at the end of every talk, there was this quote unquote reflection time where you could go up front and like give your life to Christ, and like everybody was going up front and like crying all over each other, and he's like, I already like gave my life to Christ, so I felt bad because I was just sitting in a seat, you know, and I'm like, oh, it was the altar call situation, right? So exactly the contrived like emotional, you know, camp related thing where all that stuff happens. So. My question is this, guys, and it's a good one. And I think, Pipe, you initially brought this up. How do we feel about altar calls for kids? Because they are younger. They don't have the sort of powers of discernment to be able to say, you know, I've already given my life to Christ. I'm good. When all their friends are like streaming up front and like, you know, crying all over the place. So what are we to do with this child altar call situation?
Well, I think Ronnie should answer this because I'm pretty sure that at his church they mandate these done in the children's program on a weekly basis. So, Ronnie, can you justify that decision, please?
Oh, dude, you got me on that one, man. I don't know. I know I went through it. I can't remember my own daughter having gone through it. I know she's going to listen to this podcast, so I think I'm going to take the opportunity to ask her later. But yeah, it's just a weird thing because this is what happens, right? So more of what happens than people going up to sort of receive salvation, I feel like it's just people that are, or kids, I should say, that are super emotional. They're feeling really guilty about all the stuff they'd been doing at camp up until that moment that they shouldn't have been doing. Yeah, and then yeah. they end up just going up basically out of guilt and shame and feeling sorry for some of the hard life they've been leading as 9-year-olds up to that point. So it's a weird culture. I mean, I grew up in the altar call
culture. Oh yeah.
I mean, yeah. I grew up in that, and it's like, so what altar calls actually turned into were rededications. So you went.
Exactly what my kid said. He goes.
Right. So like Big T, it was like that kind of thing, right? Where you look at your buddy and go, dude, I thought you were saved. And he goes, no, I was just rededicating this week. I'm like, yeah, but you did that like the last 8 weeks in a row, man. Like what, how many rededications are we talking about?
Dude, exactly. My kid goes, I went up one time, I did the recommit. You know, they gave me the option.
I did. NBA free agency is starting and it's like, yeah, he took the player option on recommitting his life to Christ.
Playing out his option.
You fill out a card, man. Is this a salvation or a recommit? We need to know before you take one step further.
Dude, if it's just a recommit, you go over.
Oh, I just came up out of sheer peer pressure.
Yeah.
They need the peer pressure box.
I think it's just so, it's so recommit. It's so recommit, right? I don't know.
Well, and I, so my daughter is, my oldest daughter is 10. And so about three times in our first 2 years living here, so we've been in Tennessee almost 3 years. It took me 2 years to get her to stop going forward at the altar calls at church. Now, I never witnessed how they did this. It might have been a soft thing. It might have been a very hard, like, you're going to hell if you don't do this. I'm not sure. I'm guessing it was more like, if you'd like to follow Christ, come forward, you know, blah, blah, blah. But she would, you know, Sunday after Sunday, this probably happened, I don't know, 3 to 4 times total over 2 years. I would get in the car with them to drive home from church, ask, you know, how did things go in Sunday school? And she would say, I gave my life to God, or I gave my life to Christ. Well, that's something every parent would like to hear. So I ask, oh, really? What? Tell me about that. Well, the whoever was speaking asked, I went forward. And so trying to kind of gauge the legitimacy of this, that sounds very skeptical because I was pretty skeptical. I said, oh, why did you go forward? Oh, because my friends did. That was once, or I'm not really sure. That was another time. And
dude, she just wanted to walk around. You know, she was tired of sitting there.
Yeah, and well, she is the classic A-type oldest kid who, if the teacher says you should do this, she's going to go, oh, I should do that. So she's doing the thing that she was asked to do, having no idea why it's the right thing to do or if it's the right thing to do. And so, but this was the kicker. So I talked to her time, you know, each of these times, and I was like, well, that's great. I'm glad you did that. We'll keep talking about it. Just sort of left the door open to further conversations because I didn't get the sense that she really knew what it meant to follow Christ at that point. But I get these emails from the children's minister, and what they would do is every time a child came forward, they would get the information. They would contact the parents and say, hey, your child made this decision. We're gonna have sort of a we just follow Jesus party, and they invite the parents to come, and then they give some follow up resources about discipling your child and some things like that. So the concept is a pretty good idea, I think, in terms of helping parents whose children have decided to follow Christ. But I finally emailed back and just said, "Hey, I mean, I said this as nicely as I could. I was basically like, my child is not following Jesus. She walked forward out of a sense of" whatever interest, obligation, something else. I said, I think I have a better sense than you guys do of whether or not she is, and we're not going to come to that party. and I never got a response back. And then the children's minister left a little while later. So I don't know if those two things were related, but but yeah, I was so frustrated because I'm like, no 8-year-old has any idea what to do with an altar call.
Right, right.
They just do what adults tell them to do or what all their friends are doing. Now, right. I'm not saying that no 8-year-old has ever been saved in an altar call. I'm just saying if they did, it was by accident.
Boy, you're not sounding very reformed right now, Pipe. I got to tell you, man.
Big R, now in a true reformed church, you could say that they do the altar call for kids like right when they're infants. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the Presbyterian idea. They call it baptism. Right.
Yeah, right. They bring them on up there, and including their 11 brothers and sisters and every extended family member, and they do the whole thing.
And right? Big T, I love how you said, and by truly reformed, that obviously has to mean Presbyterian, right? Because
we're all
just partial reformed here, you know. But here's my question, man.
Maybe so I'm just partial reformed too, though, for the record.
I know that, yeah. Man. So here's my quest, right? So this is what I want to know, because like I grew up in the Calvary Chapel movement in SoCal, which is just altar call central.
Absolutely.
Like, dude, there's not even seats.
The whole thing is an altar.
Oh, dude, it's all standing up. There's not a sermon that gets preached that doesn't end with an AC, right? So I'm guessing that. So wait a minute. Now hear me out here. So
right,
I didn't grow up in any sort of Baptist environment, although Calvary Chapels kind of came a little out of an older Baptist movement. Is that a Baptist thing, the whole altar call?
Dude, you know, it's weird because I didn't grow up in a particularly Baptist environment either. But at my church camp, like the one I went to every summer, it was definitely a part of it.
Okay, so here's my question then. I'm about to say a kind of a bad word. It starts with a D. Is this kind of a dispensational thing? Is this kind of?
I think it's. I don't know whether it's dispensational. It is.
I think it is. I think it's tied into that, though, man.
You can find the two in a lot of the same places. So I don't know if it's causation or correlation, but it's definitely not a reformed thing.
Distinctly not reformed.
Although lots of reformed churches will send their kids and youth to camps where they do these things. So camp is built on disgusting games and altar calls. Because
Reformed churches don't do camps. You got to send your kids.
They don't do camps anymore.
The dispies are the fun ones, so we send dispies. Absolutely, are way
send our kids
fun,
to the
so
dispies to have
there.
Fun.
That's
you know,
right.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, our church never did altar calls, and I was Baptist, but it was obviously quite Reformed. Yeah. So then we moved to the South, and even really theologically sound churches. So, and I don't mean reformed by that. I mean like they really care about their Bibles and teaching things. They do altar calls. So it's, I don't know if it might be a North-South thing. Our listeners, I'm sure, will have lots of input on this. Please hit us up, listeners. Yeah. We'd love to have your input. But it is the church I go to has really sound teaching. It's very modern in all of the ways a church can be modern in terms of technology and music and whatever else. Like, you wouldn't guess that they do the altar calls, but then many Sundays, especially when guest preachers are there and in the kids programs, you get to the end and it turns into a tent revival meeting, and you just sort of like, I expect like George Beverly Shea to be singing or something. And I'm like, what happened? These don't go together. But I think it's because they brought with them the altar call culture from the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way up into the 20-teens.
Well, yeah,
they just never threw it overboard, even though
it's fascinating
kinda weird.
Like, if we ever did any, you know, homework on Wikipedia, we would probably know a little bit about the history of altar calls. But man, I mean, that would be I feel like I wish we could delve a little further into that, because I feel like the Apostle Paul would, like, you know, turn in his grave if he knew that we had adopted this kind of methodology. Because it's really like, when you get right down to it, it's like it's kooky. You know what I mean? It's kind of kookyisms. You know what I mean? Like, who developed this, and why did this become a thing? The fact that, like, we all in some ways kind of grew up with it. Well, you didn't really, Piper, but I guess you did, Big T. It's really strange, because like growing up with it, you never thought twice about it. But then when you're out of it, you look back on it and you go, oh, that was just kind of weird. That was just bizarre.
Maybe, I think it speaks to like our desire to close the deal. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? To be closers. Like, so you've whipped everybody into this frenzy because of your like oratory skills or the movie that you've just watched or whatever. And yeah, there's just a sense of like, I want to close this thing. I want to, you know, so we can get the numbers or tell people how many people came to Christ or whatever. And which is another weird thing. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes,
so you get the report up in front of the church from church camp. And it's like, well, we saw 78 new kids come to the Lord. And I don't know that.
It's like saying like you need to trust God for your salvation, but we're not going to trust God for your salvation.
Yeah,
so let's
exactly.
do this.
Exactly. We're going to go ahead and do the numbers and the accounting and all that stuff, you know, right along with it. So
in terms of attaching it to a church culture, it wasn't until I moved to the South that I started seeing pastors who I knew, Southern pastors, who would tweet regularly on Sundays or on Mondays, saw 143 people saved yesterday.
Pipe, now that's just crazy.
that they're yeah, but I mean, is that the whole point though? Is that they can play a numbers game with it? They want to be able to.
But the crazier thing is that these are guys who I respect. Like these are not.
They're not like nut jobs.
Yeah, they're not like they're not church growth monsters who only care about those kind of like they're godly guys. They really love Jesus. But it's just I think it's so ingrained into the culture of how church is done that it's like they wouldn't think twice about it.
And they've never questioned it. They've never like thought like, I don't know, should we be doing this kind of thing?
Right. And then they do updates from the camps that their churches are putting on or they have kids at, you know, and they'll be like, they'll send out an email and be like, last night 78 kids were saved at Camp Wahini, whatever long name. And parents are, you know, everybody's like, praise God. And it's, and but again, I'm like, does anybody look back at this and go, what happened to all those people?
Yeah,
because
if
we saw over the course of a year 1,100 people saved at our church, how come our attendance is exactly the same now as it was at the beginning of the year?
Exactly.
Where did they go?
Yeah,
or do the rest of us just dislike new believers so much that we all leave and they replace us? Like it's a strange game to play.
The latter,
it is, man, it is
the new Christians thing. Yeah, we're out.
Yeah, the
They're
latter.
Weird. They're baby
well,
Christians,
and all that,
just like Donald Trump.
All that, boys, fills me with a ton of anxiety, given that I'm going to be speaking at one of these camps in a few weeks. So,
do not do an altar call. Just tell them about Jesus.
But they're asking you. They're asking you to do an altar call.
Dude, no, they're actually really cool about it. So I actually talked with the camp guy, and he's a reform guy. He was basically like, no, dude, don't do the emotional thing. Like, just give your talks. Make him.
So because he's reformed, he's saying just strip all emotion out of it. So that we're good with absolutely zero emotion.
Please
he's like, make it like
analytical.
A college class, like a lecture. Yes. You know.
Please be very analytical. Use good
cold
argumentation.
Cold and dispassionate.
Yes.
Watch some D.A. Carson sermons. Whatever he does, do that. When by that we mean do nothing.
I'm just going to play some D.A. Carson sermons on the
well,
video screen.
The key to doing D.A. Carson is to wear spectacles, not glasses, spectacles. Yeah. And periodically you take them off and you spin them around while you're making a sarcastic point. Or you fold them up and gesture with them if you're making a strong point.
Heartfelt
point. You have to pronounce it 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians, something that he has in common with Trumpy. And then also the book is not Isaiah, it's Isaiah. So,
and when you say the word wrath, you say Roth.
Roth, yes.
Like Rothschild. And baby,
like
you wear glasses, so you're going to be able to pull that off. Yeah, right, like David Lee Roth. So whenever
David
you
Lee
say
Roth.
The word wrath, just say Roth and think of David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
In the glory message, days of Van Halen.
Yeah, according to Van Halen.
According to D.A. Carson, according to Van Halen, it's God's wrath.
Boys, listen to me. There's nothing that teenagers love more than D.A. Carson.
Oh, you know what I mean? Absolutely.
They have so much fun with Dak and his talks.
He's always been big with the altar call crowd, man. The teen altar call crowd.
Huge with the camp crowd. Dak was really a camp guy. I mean, if you look closely, he's got like a pair of like khaki cargo shorts and a Jesus fish tattoo.
And guys,
absolutely. I mean, I got to start hanging the phone up on him when we start planning our youth retreats because that's all he wants to do is come every summer to teach at those things.
Dude, he wants to talk about what games are going to get played and
I'm like, Dak, we got to bring in some other guys, man. It just can't be you every week.
He went through a rough stretch after he tore his rotator cuff playing dodgeball, though. So
he couldn't do the zip line anymore, Pipe, after that.
Yeah, it was tough. Well,
and we know how much
Dak are so baggy that the little harness thing is real uncomfortable around it. So zip line.
Dak loved the zip line. He loved the ropes course. You know,
there's nothing he likes more than a good zip line before Canadian lunch.
The lakeside hymn sing was really his favorite, though.
Absolutely.
Oh man.
Well, boys, speaking of, you know, kind of ways to get people involved emotionally with what you're doing, be it through film or music. Big R, you brought something to our attention today via text, which really. I have to say, and I have to set this up for our listeners, this could be it could be hard for our listeners because I feel like the text discussion resulted in some real conflict, some friction between you and Pipe. So I want you to know I'm here to mediate. OK,
well,
so I want to
tell Ronnie not to call me names anymore.
Big R, no names. OK, we're going to be men about this. We're going to be civil about it. But the film that I want to talk about is. It's called Calvinist, And it's a documentary, Big R. You sent us the information, the link to this guy's Kickstarter page, which inadvertently we're probably giving this guy all kinds of, like, you know, promotional energy for his Kickstarter. But it's
called, he needs to sponsor the program for sure.
He needs to sponsor the program.
But he needs people to donate money so he can afford to sponsor the program.
Absolutely.
So this guy, I've never heard of the guy before. His name's Les Lanphier. Have we heard of this guy? Do you guys know
anything? I have not.
Oh, he sounds like a Calvinist homeschool dad.
Yeah, you got it. So
offense, Les.
I'm just looking at like the first frame of the trailer, and I didn't watch the trailer. But it's saying it's got Michael Horton. So Horty's in it. Tim Challies, who it gets, you know, barely more Calvinist than Tim Challies. James White, Jimmy White is a part of this. A guy named R. Scott Clark, who I've never heard of. And then our boy Joe Thorne, the bearded one.
The bearded one.
Is going to be involved in the film Calvinist. So this guy is looking to raise some money for the project. And these are some of the levels that you can pledge at. So Pipe, if you're interested, get out the checkbook or the PayPal account. And if you pledge $1, so just $1, you're on board at what's called the Common Grace level.
Oh, nothing is better than Calvinist jokes. They're awesome.
Calvinist jokes. So this thing is saturated. This thing is laden with Calvinist jokes. So $10 or more, you're on board at the Cage Stage Calvinist level. All right.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
$25 or more. This one's great for a couple of reasons. I'll suss it out. $25 or more, you're on the Sola Gracias level. And then, it's a little joke. It's a little wordplay. But then he parentheticaled and he goes, I know it's Gratia. Because he knew he was going to get a bunch of angry Calvinists.
Because he knew he was
going
to get the well actually guys.
Yeah, well actually, I don't know if you know this, but I just wanted to point out, you know.
In the original Latin,
exactly. This one I like, and I'm gonna stop with this one and just let you guys riff on the film itself. If you pledge $35 or more, you get on the Sola Stictura level, and you get some stickers that say Calvinist on them.
Amazing.
So, boys, there's a documentary about...
Come on, no. Keep going through the levels. They just get better and better.
All right.
So $50 or more... We've got T stands for T-shirt level. I'm assuming that's a play on tulip. And
it is. It's a play on tulip. I love it.
The $80 level is Caffeination of the Saints level.
That's such a dad joke.
That is. That's amazing. And then $100 or more is the tulip level. So apparently you've arrived. You're all 5 points. And then
I have to do something that I don't do on this program, and that is while you guys riff on this, I'm going to do some research on this Les Lanphier. I'm going to see if I can learn anything about this kid.
He's got to be a dad with these jokes. Let's see, where were we? We were $150, the irresistible level. So we got a little irresistible grace joke going on here. That's amusing. $250 for all of the rich Calvinists out there is the Calvinist poster boy level. Mm-hmm. And then $500 or more is the inner circle level. I don't know if that's a joke or if he's actually like there actually is an inner circle. I think that's possible. And then they get boring and you're a producer, executive producer, blah 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 blah. So lots of theological and dad jokes wrapped into one, which I think our listeners will really appreciate.
All right, so I just figured out who this guy is. Have you guys heard of a thing called the Reformed Pubcast?
Yes.
Yeah, that's him.
I've heard of it. I'd never listened to it, but this is the guy from that thing.
Oh, okay.
This documentary.
That's our rival podcast. You realize that, boys? That is literally our rival podcast.
How many hosts do they have?
Reform Pubcast?
Yes.
I think they have two.
It looks like...
I think we should challenge them to some sort of feats of physical strength or something.
Dude, I think
lines.
We should have like a showdown, like a pod down. Like a podcast now.
Dude, and Pipe, per your comment last week, it should all be American Gladiator themed.
Absolutely, because everybody wants to see us in red, white, and blue singlets.
Absolutely. singlets. And pugil sticks
But do I get to shoot the tennis ball gun at the people trying to make it across the obstacle course?
Dude, that tennis ball gun
far.
Was the best
that's
thing.
Too far.
That was literally the most fun for sure.
Oh my gosh, yes. No, it's two guys named Les and Tanner.
Yeah.
So just two dudes.
I didn't know it was those guys. All right. Well, that kind of adds up a little bit. And this dude's done a little bit. I think he's done some film work on some other like A-level, A-list films too. It's from his you got to click play Big T and like watch the trailer. He kind of explains who he is and what his aim is a little bit.
So, dude, really? So. Is that him on the trailer then?
Yeah.
So, okay, Ronnie, I'm going to click play on the trailer right now.
In our less than civil text exchange, well, you were very supportive of this project, and in the spirit of true debate and also
hold on, Pipe. Civility. Actually, I never said one word either way. I just asked why you were so against it.
False. You insinuated support.
Oh, well, there's the key word. There's the I word. So carry on.
This is how theological debates go. You don't have to be clear. You just have to appear to be different than me, and then I get to blast you. So why don't you express your positive feelings about this, and I will let you finish. I'm going to let you finish, and then I'll take over from there.
Wow, Big T, did you just hear what Pipe said? He's going to let me finish. I mean, I don't know if I should throw a party right now or go celebrate somewhere. I don't know what to do with that.
Maybe it's exciting. You have the floor.
It's a big privilege. Okay, so this is all that happened, man. I clicked play on the trailer, and I saw a guy that seemed, you know, fairly sincere, that wanted to make something that had some artistic merit. He had a little bit of, you know, he had some credentials that made it seem like he could, you know, actually do a documentary that had a little bit of credibility to it. And, you know, obviously since I would, you know, market myself under the C word a little bit, I was interested in what he had to say. And I'm all for things like this being made if they're done well. So regardless of the content, if it's done well, I think it, you know, it's something that deserves to be heard. So again, I'm not saying I'm all bought in, but I'm interested in it. I like the guys he has kind of listed, you know, for it. You know, our boy Joey Thorne and Timmy Challies and Horton and these guys. And so I think it can be something that could be worthwhile in terms of it being like educational for people that have the old cliched, horrible, you know, outlook on the Calvinist position. So that's it really right there. So throw it out, man. What do you got? What do you got, Pipe? You're the vitriol, man. Let's hear it.
I have a few thoughts. First, right. Nobody is going to watch this who's not already a Calvinist, so no stereotypes will be done away with. The only people who like talking about Calvinism are Calvinists, and nobody likes talking about anything more than Calvinists like to talk about being Calvinist. Calvinists love to talk about being Calvinist.
Almost
as much as introverts love to tweet about being introverted.
You mean all pastors who claim they're introverts? Right.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So everybody loves to tweet about being introverted and how exhausted they are from people. Calvinists love talking about Calvinism and being Calvinist and labeling things Calvinist. I mean, it's how Together for the Gospel thrives year after year without ever doing anything different. It's because it's Calvinists talking about being Calvinist.
What could be better?
This will succeed. This will absolutely succeed.
It will.
It is already since you texted about this whatever 2 hours ago, Ronnie. They are they have gained $1,500 on the Kickstarter.
Yeah, so it's gonna be huge.
They will succeed, and I'm not opposed to them doing the project. I simply don't care. And I don't understand why Calvinists love being Calvinist so much. Like, don't get it.
Well, this is what I'm more. Go ahead, Big T.
Psychology behind that, baby, because I think it has something to do with, like, it's why kids get to college and join fraternities. You know what I mean? Like, you just want to belong. You want to be a part of something. You want to have some T-shirts. You want to have somebody to sit with at lunch. You know what I mean? Is it the same kind of thought process with that?
I guess it carries such like a heavy weight of a label, right? It's like there's a reason why you know, like denominationally, like Baptists love going around saying I'm a Baptist, right? Like, so I'm part of the Free Church. Nobody goes around saying like I'm a Free Churcher, right? It's just like, and what's always been fascinating about the whole Calvinist thing, you know.
No, but do they go around waving like the Sojourn flag though at all?
No, not at all. That's what I'm saying. So like what's fascinating about the Calvinist position, if you take that there's two positions, right? So there's Arminian Calvinist. Obviously, we're all, you know, Calvinists. So what's fascinating to me about it, just in general, when you look at it broadly, is that nobody walks around like holding up like a card saying like Arminian, that's me, arrow pointing at me. But like Calvinists like carry the weight and the title and the identity, and they wave the flag of this whole thing. I think that in and of itself is super interesting in and of itself, given that like the other position never represents themselves with that position. But yet you have this position, which we think is, you know, biblical and it has the most clarity, blah, 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 all that stuff. So like what we've done is we've adopted to the point to where like we're drinking the Kool-Aid, we're wearing the t-shirt, we got the sticker, we got the conference, we're making the movies, we're writing the books, we got the publishing companies, we got the, wait for it, boys, the podcasts. Mm. It's fascinating. I just think it's totally fascinating. Thoughts?
It's fascinating. It's fascinating like a nature documentary.
But then what are we doing right now, Pipe? What are we doing?
We're making fun of how strange it is.
But like, we're one of them.
Yes and no, because there's different ways to define them.
Oh, dude.
No, because here's the deal. There's the theology. There's Reformed theology, which at its best informs how you live life. It informs how you see the world. It informs how you read scripture. It informs how you interact with God, what you believe about salvation, all of those things.
Right.
Then there's the culture of Calvinism, which I want absolutely no part of. And the reason I'm on this podcast is to poke fun at it because it's absurd.
But how do you get the lifestyle and the belief without the culture? How do you separate those two?
By not being a jerk. Like,
but you're still in the culture.
Which culture are we talking about? The Calvinist culture,
or described.
But it's like you can be a college student without being in a fraternity. You can still go to class and study hard. You can still pursue a degree. You can still make friends. You can still like. You can do all of the things in college. You just don't have to go pledge and binge drink and, you know, generally be an idiot.
No, that's fine. And I think we're proving that you don't have to be that. But here's my question, all right? And this is what I want listeners to write in about. How many non-reformed listeners do we have for this podcast? That's what I want to know.
Okay.
Because and then, that would be interesting.
Second question. How many – so first question, how many non-reformed? That's a very good question. Second question, how many people – would label themselves as reformed and are generally weirded out by the stereotypes of reformed culture.
That's fine, and I'm with you, but that doesn't mean we're not in the culture. This podcast probably exists because we're within that culture, and
okay,
that's
but,
the listeners we have.
And I'm not saying I'm not in the culture, and if I was truly trying to distance myself from it, I would have gone like the rebel without a cause route and just, you know, peaced out because this is the culture where, like, if I want to read theology, it comes out of the Reformed camp, generally speaking. I do read non-Reformed folks. But it's – but when I hear people and when I see stuff like this, it's like people love the label Calvinist. And to me, that is – and I've argued with my dad about this. I don't ever win arguments with him for the record. But I've argued – like, that label is divisive, not helpful.
We're not going to disagree with that, man. And I mean, so me and Big T are not going to.
And so when I say I want no part of it, I'm talking about all of the things that are divisive about it. Because I believe if a truly reformed person should absolutely be able to interact with an Arminian and a semi-Pelagian and a Buddhist and a Hindu and a, you know, and whoever else, and you're arguing for the gospel. You're not arguing for reformed theology. And if you want to come back and say reformed theology is the gospel, you're wrong. It's not. Like, the gospel is bigger than reformed theology. This is a way of understanding things. I think it is the closest to the truth that we can understand. But Arminian people are saved too, and too many Calvinists act like they're not, and those people are morons.
I'm with you, kind of. But yeah, so that it's a point well taken. And I think we can but here's the thing, right? So we can be a part of a culture. I think we can be more effective in the culture by embracing it to a point, being in it, and then also poking fun at it. So instead of like trying to like try to have these nuances of like, oh, I just hate the culture. I have one foot in, one foot out. And it's like, no. We're in it. I mean, that's why we're doing what we're doing. But we can also have some nuance and some dynamic in it and not be like, you know, kind of like at the hyper end of the culture. And I think that's where we fit in. And I like that.
To back up to when I said I want no part of it, I'm not talking about reformed people or the things that or you know, the community of people. I mean, I'm at all the reformed conferences in general, mostly because of work, but that's generally where my affinity lies.
Right.
What I'm talking about, every aspect of the culture that is that I would deem to be divisive or just dumb. And that, but the thing is, that goes for church as a whole. We were just talking about altar calls. That's just weird. It's not helpful. So it's those weird aspects of things. And when I saw this documentary thing, like I just want to go, why? Who benefits from this? This is navel gazing by a navel gazing crowd. We love talking about ourselves and how reformed we are. So let's make a documentary about how reformed people are.
Dude, no way. I mean, Pipe, hold on. I mean, you got to at least have a convo with that dude and find out like what his intentions are.
No, I'm not.
Dude, I don't think you need to.
I'm not disparaging his artistic abilities or his intentions. I'm talking about what will happen with it.
His intentions
can be to evangelize Arminians. His intentions can be to do an even-handed, level-headed explanation of this to people who have an incorrect, stereotypical view of, you know, God's sovereignty or whatever. That's good. Fine. But those people are never going to watch this. You know who's going to watch this? Calvinists. And then they're going to tweet about it. And then other Calvinists are going to retweet that. And then they're going to get their Calvinist buddies to watch it. And we're all going to be a little more Calvinist at the end of the day.
Piper, let the poor kid give it a shot, man.
Which maybe sounds amazing.
Maybe this will be one of those attempts that actually goes a little bit further down that path that you're saying
okay,
is impossible.
Ronnie, let me ask you something.
It won't be.
Are you pushing back because he's in the Reformed camp and it feels uncomfortable for you for a Calvinist guy to critique another Calvinist guy?
Now, I don't think I would be on that podcast if I felt that way at all. I mean, look at what we just did. Look at all the Reformed funny ha-has we just did on D.A. Carson. Come on. You know,
I was mostly being facetious.
But he has a great sense of humor. He can take it.
Yeah, D.A. Carson, barrel of laughs.
Funny guy.
No, not at all. And I think we should be able to, man, we should be able to push back on anything in a way that shows a little bit of satire, not taking ourselves seriously. I would say that is my biggest criticism of Calvinist culture is its inability to laugh at itself.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, that may transition well to our next topic. And so, who's just as bad at laughing at themselves?
Who, Pipe? Tell us.
Progressive Christians.
Oh,
so,
man.
Are you guys familiar with the site The Babylon Bee?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a satire site. Some of their stuff is very pointed and biting. Some of it is generally very funny. It's basically The Onion for Christians, if you're familiar with The Onion.
Some of it's brilliant. Some of it's really brilliant.
I mean, and like all satire, some of it's a swing and a miss. Some of it's hilarious. But they took on, who was it? Jen Hatmaker in a post.
Yeah.
And the progressive Christians who love Jen Hatmaker. And by the way, I think Jen Hatmaker in general, pretty cool. So that's this has nothing to do with her in person.
Dude, but who's Jen Hatmaker? Is she progressive? She just seems like a suburban kind of
progressive
to me.
She would be progressive in the sense of like more just very much more open-handed theologically and culturally in terms of who she would count herself in the camp of. You know, Calvinist.
She just seems like she's about like not excluding any audience who might buy a product, you know?
Yeah, I mean, she's not Elise Fitzpatrick, but she's also not, you know, Rachel Evans either. She's like somewhere in between.
But,
you know?
Rachel the Hell to Evans and others came to her defense and just like think pieces galore ripping Babylon Bee and satire in general and just generally being like, that's so cruel and mean-spirited and all that to say it's because one camp criticized the other camp. And so they took it very, very personally. So
no, it's because one camp criticized their camp.
Well, that's what I mean. Like the criticism came from outside the camp. So I think Calvinists can take some criticism from within the camp. I'm hoping so, because I just wasn't the most gracious person in the world to somebody working on a creative project. I kind of feel bad about that, because creative projects are very hard things to do, and I didn't mean to disparage that guy's work. I'm just talking about where it's going to end up. I guess that's what I'm getting at. So it could be an awesomely well done thing. I don't see any good coming out of it outside the Calvinist camp. Anyway.
Well, so, boys, let's transition from the most Calvinist thing in the world to perhaps the least Calvinist person in the world.
Because who would that be, Big T? Enlighten
us. Well, I'll tell you, Big R. I'll get there. We have had some people, some listeners to this program, which if you listen to the program, we appreciate you, and we're stoked to have you on board, and we're excited when you write in and contribute and ask questions. But we had people wondering what's up with the sign-off where I say Rachel LaHeld Evans, right? This is a thing that we've been doing here on the program for about the last, I don't know, 6 months or so. And I just want to suss out a little bit of the backstory on that so that people aren't confused by it. Early in this show's history, we had another host. There was a gentleman named Stephen Altrogi who was a part of this program.
May God rest his soul.
Yeah, what happened to him? How did he die again?
Guys, we don't know. It's shrouded in mystery, as it were. Maybe someone Les Landfear is actually working on a documentary called Altrogi.
I would watch that and tweet it. So,
I don't know why. It's not going to change anybody's mind about Altrogi. It's just going to
be a bunch of Altrogi fans watching.
Did you watch The People versus O.J. Simpson? Because that changed a lot of people's minds. These things do change people's minds.
That's true. Wow.
Media just not the Calvinist one, because the only people who are going to watch it are Calvinists.
I'm so confused. Go on, Big T.
Last word had, man, right there. So anyway, we were talking about Altrogi and his tenure on this program, and he kind of ruled the program with an iron fist. He had certain ground rules, one of which was that we could never utter the name of Rachel Held Evans, who, if you don't know who she is, just Google her. She's very active on Twitter, and that's her thing. So anyway, she and Trogues had some throwdowns on Twitter. So they'd had some history, some backstory, and Trogues just asked that we never mention her by name.
Yeah, she basically got the Voldemort treatment. It was sort of a she who shall not be named situation.
She who should not be named, things of which we do not speak, etc. So when Trogues left the program of his own volition, Pipe, I think it's safe to say that you and I felt a certain freedom. You know, it's sort of like when you're a teenager and like your parents left the house for the weekend, you know, you could like, I don't know, watch Police Academy or whatever, you know, whatever kind of thing you did to like test the boundaries.
Oh yeah.
For us, that thing was uttering the name of Rachel Held Evans on the air. And it was so exciting to do that we just started using it as the sign off. So,
and it doesn't have anything to do with any particular instance of Rachel Held Evans doing anything.
It has zero to do with her. We don't think about her. We don't care about her other than wishing her well in general.
I was going to say, it's not even to make fun of her. It is It is simply exercising our freedom in podcasting at the departure of...
It's teenage rebellion. It's total angst.
Yes.
Big R, it's garden variety teenage rebellion is what it is. You're absolutely right. So we just enjoy saying it. That's where it came about. And I don't know. I hope that's helpful. I hope that's helpful for listeners.
Guys, do we have a little update on the current whereabouts and whatabouts of Rachel Held Evans? What's going on right now with Rach?
Well, she was thrown down with Pipe's dad a couple weeks ago, but I'm sure that's old news.
Yeah,
that's old news for people.
My favorite thing in the world is following people on Twitter who are taking on things that my dad said, and especially when I get included. She didn't include me in that. She's very nice not to do that, but
thankfully,
my favorite thing. She recently, not too long ago, had a child. I glean all this from Twitter. I have never spoken to Rachel, but recently had a child, so she's tweeting a lot about motherhood these days and what that is teaching her. That's not easy.
What is it teaching her?
Progressive motherhood?
A recent one that I saw is that motherhood provides so much great writing material and no time to write. Mm. I concur. Not being a mother, but from a distance observing, I would concur that that's very likely to be true.
Now, are they doing the gender thing with their kid, or are they just letting the kid figure it out?
She hasn't clarified that. So I also don't know the gender of the child. But being a mother is a lot of
not
work.
Important.
So I hope she's
not important.
Yeah, I hope she's doing just fine with that. That's not a very easy thing to do.
True. Well, I don't know what note to end on here, boys.
I feel like we've gotten somber. Me and Pipe had our first on the air fight. I mean,
how do you guys feel in the wake of that?
It's tender. There's a lot. There's some wounds. There's some tenderness going on here right now.
I'm ready for round two.
Yeah, Pipe's like, I don't have any wounds. I'm like Drago after I fought Creed. You know,
spoken like a Piper.
Barely broke a sweat, man. Creed's over there dead in a heap.
See, this was just the pre-debate, right, Ronnie?
This is the reformed jackass coming out in me. Like, you started a fight, and I will keep going until I win.
Pipe, that's the ironic thing. If you wanted to be, you could be such a great reform jackass. You know what I mean?
What do you mean wanted to be? I mean, what?
Look,
is there an identity thing? Is there a gender thing here going on that I'm not aware about?
Here's the deal.
Pipe doesn't identify as a reform jackass.
No, you just drop the word reformed and it's more accurate.
Yeah.
I'm really good at that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know, we all have our gifts. We all have our callings, you know?
God bless us, everyone.
Exactly.
We're going to get to that in 6 months at Christmas time. Hang in there.
Oh, that's right. Christmas sweaters and all.
Christmas. Yeah, Big R is going to plan our Christmases, Pipe, because we're such curmudgeons about it. He's going to take care of us.
If it involves me singing Christmas carols, we will have a true throwdown.
Guys, yeah, not until our December podcast. Don't tease everybody like that, you know?
Dude, we should
Hold on.
We should go door to door on our podcast in December. Each of us with our separate computers and microphones, caroling.
Guys, don't think for a minute that in Louisville, I'm not going to be bringing a little guitar and singing some originals.
Could you bring a ukulele instead?
I'm not that hipster. I don't buy into all that Mumford and Sons worship shenanigans stuff, Piper. Come on.
I'm so glad to hear you say that.
Let's be honest.
Oh, you said worship shenanigans. I didn't know where you were going. You said worship show. Oh, really, Ronnie? What are we having to say about this?
Dude, listen. I work on a college campus. I can swing a cat in any direction here and hit a kid with a ukulele. I'm serious. That's
Here's your mission, should you choose to accept it. Could you actually do that? Go swing a cat and hit a kid with a ukulele?
I would love to
see that on video.
If you can get that, then send it to us and we will post it on one of our Twitter accounts, Big T.
There you go.
Oh, speaking of this, there is a burgeoning Twitter movement to get Ted on Twitter, and apparently it's a gut check podcast initiated thing. Your co-host there, Ted, started it.
Yep.
So there's a hashtag get Ted on Twitter. What promise did you make to
I didn't make any promises. Zach made he intimated that if we got 500 get Ted on Twitter, I don't know, whatever tweets,
like
mentions that I would join Twitter. I don't know. I'm not ready to say that. But I would give it some thought. You know.
All right. Well, I mean, we've got to be getting close.
Yeah.
So
to 500.
Okay. It's a little fuzzy because do retweets count or does it have to be like original?
I don't even know. I don't know the etiquette on this stuff. You decide.
Well, no, it's up to you because you're the one who would be on Twitter. If I'm deciding, you should be on Twitter tomorrow because that would be fun for me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'd be any fun for you. But so listeners, if you use the hashtag get Ted on Twitter, there's a non-zero chance he will get on Twitter at some point in the distant future.
I love it.
By the way, just to pour some salt on a previous wound, I just pledged $25,575. The Calvinist movie is being made now. So
you actually get to play John Calvin in the movie for that amount.
I just received an Amazon Prime package with like a beard and like
a beard and some robes.
Oh, it's from missional wear. Never mind.
Does it also have a stake where you can burn your opponents?
Yeah, absolutely. I know Calvin had some issues, didn't he? Maybe one of these times we can talk about some of the, some of the tendencies of Calvin to not be so reformed himself.
How about Luther and his anti-Semitism and not very nice things said about the Pope?
I just don't know why. Nobody seems to care about Luther. You know, it's kind of weird with reformed guys.
Yeah, other than on Halloween, the day that we don't celebrate because it's Reformation Day.
Right, we celebrate Luther, and we have that one Witch of Endor story that we can do during our like Harvest Festival or whatever we do. You know, we'll talk about that in October for sure. Though it's going to be fun.
You guys ever watch that Luther movie with the dude from Shakespeare in Love?
Josephine's. I heard it was good, but I never saw it. Was it good?
It was okay. I don't remember much about it except that it had Josephine's in it. It had the dude from from Shakespeare in Love. But
do we have so many things to talk about right now, and it's just no time. Big T.
I know, baby. We've been going for an hour. Things. I got to land this plane, don't I?
Yeah, it's like a bad. It's like been a bad sermon almost, man.
Yeah, no, it's been a standard conclusion. Then it went out.
It's been a Matt Chandler sermon, man. We've just gone over the hour mark, and everybody's like, "All right, we got to eat lunch at some point."
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? Let's break for lunch. Let's let these people go and get their quinoa salad. So, boys, this has been fun as always. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
Have you ever considered yourself a messenger? Whether it's mics like this, bookshelves around the world, stages to take, or art to make, or perhaps businesses to build, it's time we start testifying truth unashamedly, creatively, and in love. My name is Tamara Andress, the host of the Messenger Movement podcast, which is designed to catalyze Christians to speak, write, build, and testify. If you're ready to turn your message into a movement and want to run with other messengers doing the thing at scale globally, search and follow the Messenger Movement podcast on your favorite podcast platform today or lifeaudio.com.